This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of July 27th, and with me on a Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I am doing well. I am cruising. Not for a bruising, I hope.
I hope you're not, but I tell you what how I feel. I feel like one of those cardboard cutouts at one of the Major League Baseball games. I'm just sitting here. I'm just propped up. I'm tired. I'm sleepy.
Okay. I'll try to help you get through this.
All right. As usual, we thank the frontline and essential workers worldwide. The numbers are just going up. And I'm not going to throw the towel in. People, stay home, cover your faces, and don't go out, you know?
Right.
even if your team hits a walk-off home run, stop and think. Don't keep the social distance rules in place. Mm-hmm. You know, you can dance 2 meters away from your teammate. You don't have to hug him.
Yeah, just be careful which teammates you're hugging.
That's true, too. Stay away from those young single dudes.
And the sumo wrestlers.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a telephone chat with Nick Martinez of Nippon Ham. We'll look at the Fighters, look at this Pacific League and the Central League, including the Alex Ramirez torment. And we'll hit a few notes and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, our interview this week is with Nippon Ham Fighters starting pitcher Nick Martinez, and it was really nice talking to Nick because he missed all of the 2019 season with an injury, and I didn't talk to him last year. John's spoken to him much more than I have. We spoke in 2018 before the start of the season, and it struck me as being really interested in learning things and picking up, he said, I want to learn what I can from Japan and then be the best pitcher I can be. And then if I can go back to the majors, I want to, make use of those skills. And so I was really interested to see, how he's progressing in that quest. And so fortunately the Fighters were able to hook us up by phone. Unfortunately, the timing turned out really badly in that the time that they wanted to do the interview was in the evening when I wasn't available. But I have an angel.
And what's up, bro?
Angel who says bro a lot. And his name is John Gibson, John E. Gibson. And he filled in for me and did just a great job. So I'll take it away, John.
Well, yeah, my first pinch hit appearance. I don't think I hit it out of the park, but I think I drove in a couple runs, so that's good. But yeah, I was pinch hitting for Jim, and this was on Friday night. And yeah, basically, as Jim said, the timing didn't work out for him. And I said, hey, buddy, don't stress. I'm working from home tonight. I can do the interview if I can get the Wonder Twins to be quiet. So we did somehow get them to be quiet. And this was during the game. Nick went back from there in Fukuoka, and he went to the hotel from the ballpark, and he had pitched on Wednesday. So he had some time and we talked. And like I said, I was pinch hitting for Jim. And so I think we've been trying to be as transparent as possible and let you guys know that we have to go through the PR departments and get permission to talk to the players. And the PR guys are usually there with the players. And in this case, that was somewhat the case. I think his interpreter was there with him, but Jim has to prepare questions ahead of time, which is probably not so much the Jim style. So Jim sent me the questions that he had prepared. And I tried to stay on script, and it worked out because I actually was working until about 30 minutes before the interview. So I wouldn't have had so much time to come up with some questions, but there were no interruptions from people walking in at the office or someone calling me or anything like that. And the Wonder Twins were very quiet. So ultimately, it was a good interview. So let's take a listen. All right. Joining us this week is Nick Martinez of the Nippon Ham Fighters. Thank you very much, Nick. It's good to talk to you, man.
Yeah. Great to talk to you again. And thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. In fact, the pleasure is all ours in this time of corona crisis and all this stuff where we can't get to the park and we can't do this and that. So we appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, no problem. Definitely some weird times.
So I remember talking to you back in March at MetLife out there in Tokorozawa against Cebu. How are you physically now and how are things going?
Physically, I feel great. You know, I think the time off from you know, the delay in the season definitely helped me, especially since I was injured last year. Definitely gave me some time to get my body right, even though I was feeling great. But it definitely, it doesn't hurt to, you know, to have some extra time.
Now, last year, how did you get injured, and what were the hurdles you faced in, you know, regaining your fitness?
So I got injured in spring training of last year, I think in March of last year, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe one of my last couple starts before the season.
Okay, probably March. Yeah,
I think it was. It was just I put together a bad cellular program. I condensed the program that I've used in the past, and which would have been okay because then I would have used the spring training to, if I would have just stuck with it, used the spring training to get into shape. And been ready, but once I got into spring training, I think I ramped it up too fast, and the intensity was too high,
right,
too early at a time, and
right,
that's what I attribute that, you know, injuring my elbow to. It's a condensed version of my throwing program, and then the intensity was too high too soon, and I think I'm luckily I didn't blow it completely and need the surgery. So I flew home. I got a PRP shot by Dr. Andrews. He said you don't need the surgery. I wasn't showing any signs. I actually passed his clinical test of like the Tommy John test. Like, he was bending my arm back and doing all that stuff and did a bunch of like different tests, right? Strength,
sure,
to test the strength. And I passed. I didn't have any pain doing it, but the MRI showed a little bit of a strain there. So, or sprain. And so he recommended to do the PRP, and it took, you know, I did the rehab, and I came back, and I feel great. In terms of the process,
yeah, the
going
through
it.
The hurdles, yeah.
Yeah, that, there's definitely some hurdles, you know. I was rehabbing in the minor leagues. You know, nobody wants to be in the minor leagues in Japan. You know, that's not what you're here for. Even though I knew, you know, I wasn't in the minor leagues because of bad performance, I was in the minor leagues because of
right, because of injury.
There's still, you know, some hurdles that, you know, you're first adapting to, like, the care that they have for you. You know, it's a different rehab process than if I did it completely in the States.
Sure.
And so, you know, there's a lot of mental games that you had to, that were, you know, played on you, and there's some down times where, you know, you just want to go home, or you don't know what's going to happen for the next year. A lot of guys, you know, it could be a career ender where they don't know what's going to happen the next year.
Sure, sure.
I think I was lucky that I had a good relationship with the fighters. They knew what type of work ethic I had, and that I was, you know, I was going to work to come back stronger. And they offered me another, you know, another position for this year.
So how does it feel to be back after all this time?
You know, it feels great. I had a little bit of jitters my first spring training outing in Okinawa, and then that, you know, that was fine. It was just one outing. And then, again, on my opening, my first start of the year, I had a little bit of jitters. But nothing I hadn't faced before. I thought I would have been fine, but I think maybe my first game of the jitters got the best of me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't able to locate that well, but again, I hadn't pitched in a long time, and overall my body felt great, which was obviously a positive.
Certainly, that's the biggest thing. That's if you're out there,
yeah,
not feeling well, then that's another,
right,
that's
right,
another opponent to overcome. So, what,
right,
kind of adjustments has it taken for you to get back into the flow?
Well, I you know, I learned a lot about what it means to take care. I've always taken care of good care of my arm, but I got into more depth about, you know, what it means to, you know, I learned about the Mark Pro and, you know, how it works to, you know, kind of get that bad blood out of It's almost like a pulsating stim machine. Kind of gets the bad blood out after a start and allows your body to get good blood in there to promote healing and recovery. So I learned a lot about that. Learned a lot about mechanics and how to get in good, strong positions so that this wouldn't happen again. And I've also I'm still using it. It's a Modus sleeve, and it tracks the stress levels in your elbow.
Okay.
And it's basically a workload management app on your phone, and I work with a coach back home in the States out of Tampa, Casey Mulholland, very progressive guy in this aspect of baseball,
mm-hmm.
where he's one of the first guys, if not the first guy, that really understands what workload management actually means. You know, every throw counts. And that Modus sleep captures all those throws and gives you feedback about how your elbow is reacting. And that way you can better structure a plan, a throwing program throughout the season. There's a lot of throwing programs out there that are cookie cutter and just apply to every pitcher. But, you know, the way I throw is different from someone else. So, you know, he might apply, you know, more stress or less stress in his elbow. So you have to account for that. And he might need to make more throws one day or less throws, depending on what that data is telling you. So it's just a good tool to use to manage your workload and manage the amount of stress you're putting on your arm.
Sounds like I'm going to have to study some kinesiology to get a hold of this.
It wouldn't hurt.
Now, I've heard about bad blood, but that's only been on the field. I haven't heard about the bad blood in the elbow, so that's a good thing.
You know, anytime you're, you know, pitching is a very unnatural motion, right? That's not, you know, so anytime you're throwing, especially at those high intensities, your muscles are doing a lot of things, and I don't want to say creating damage, that's a bad thing, but you get that soreness, that stiffness the next day, and that the Mark Pro is a machine that helps you alleviate that stiffness.
Sure, I'm gonna do some studying. So now NPB hasn't really, this is my question, this is not Jim's, but NPB hasn't been testing daily for COVID-19 or anything close to that pace. So how do you feel about playing during this pandemic hit season?
You know, we've been tested a couple times. Yeah, we're getting tested about once a month, I guess, which is better than nothing. I feel fine. I can understand how some players might want to be tested more. Personally, I feel great. I haven't had any symptoms, thank God. So it's a tricky one, I guess. I think if they're able to test more often, why not? It wouldn't hurt. It'd be better. I think the best thing would be right now is to avoid another shutdown. You know, I don't think we'd be able to afford that.
Oh, definitely.
And if more testing is the answer to that, then I'm all for it.
Yeah. So you said only one time, but it has been. They said they were tested every 2 weeks.
Times. We've been tested
okay.
two times.
Okay. Great. All right. Yeah. Because I was going to say, hang on a second. So how has the pandemic personally affected you?
You know, I would say that it hasn't affected me as much as other players. I've had my family out here, which just helped tremendously. I know a lot of ball players that couldn't get their family out here in time, mm-hmm. other foreigners, so they've been alone and without their family, and obviously not knowing kind of messes with your head a little bit, and you worry about the safety of your family.
A lot,
so that can definitely mess with your head a little bit. But for me, I've had my family out here the whole time, and I think Japan is doing, you know, a lot better than most countries. So we were in a good spot, I think. So I really haven't, you know, we've obviously just respected and not gone out a whole lot. We didn't go out to dinner, just going to the grocery store when we needed to. We did a lot of cooking at home, which was actually kind of eye-opening because we went out to dinner way too much, you know, looking at our credit card statements, a lot of money not going out to restaurants and cooking at home. It hasn't been too bad for me personally, but I know other players have definitely struggled with that aspect.
All right, so what have you needed to learn to be successful in Japan?
I've had to learn how to change my routine a little bit to fit my routine in with some of the time constraints, especially on the road. Sometimes on the road, we get to the field at certain times where we may not have the full time to get ready. You know, I personally like to take, you know, maybe like an hour, hour and a half, maybe sometimes 2 hours to kind of go through a warm up to be ready for stretch or to be ready for practice.
Right.
And on the road, you know, you leave the hotel and get to the ballpark, and then you have stretch within in like 30, 40 minutes. So I've had to learn how to use the hotel. I do the hotel after breakfast or lunch or something. I'm in my room and I'm stretching and kind of doing different activation exercises or mobility exercises, so that when I get to the ballpark, I can continue and maybe warm up my arm or do things to get my arm ready, so that I'm not out there cold.
Is that only on pitching days, or is that generally?
I think that's no. It's more so on in between the starts. On pitching days, I get to the ballpark with the team, and I have like 3 hours before my start, so sure. I'm able to do everything I want on the start day, for sure, home and on the road.
Right. Yeah, and including talk to me for about 40 minutes at MetLife one day, and then hey, I got to go pitch. I'll talk to you later. I'm like, whoa. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were pitching that day.
That was my first year, I think, right?
That was the first year. That's correct.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm like, oh, man, I didn't realize that you were pitching that day. I hadn't checked the
That's okay. Yeah, to your defense, I came out to the ballpark or to the dugout and was kind of just standing around watching guys. And I think it was before stretch, too, so it was definitely it was confusing on your part. And I don't know a lot of starting pitchers that hang out in the dugout during batting practice on their start days.
I don't know many who will sit and have a conversation with a reporter for 30-plus minutes either. So I appreciated it, though. It was a fun day.
No problem, man. No problem.
All right. So you came to Japan, and you spoke about basically learning from Japanese baseball. So how's that whole process going?
I'm continuing to learn, right? I mean, there's you know, I'm facing new hitters, and these hitters have more information and face me more times, so now I have to beat them to the punch a little bit. But I think the biggest thing playing baseball in Japan is learning to be comfortable throwing all your pitches. A lot of the American guys that come over here maybe struggle with commanding all of their pitches or just having the confidence to throw all those pitches in every count, where you may only have confidence to throw a certain pitch in a certain count. But coming to Japan, I learned right away that I need to be comfortable throwing all of my pitches in every count, 3-0, 3-1. You know, it doesn't matter what the count or situation is. And I think that's helped me. It's helped me grow as a pitcher.
And I'm assuming that, I think when we spoke a long time ago, your first year, we talked about the possibility of you maybe going back to the States. And so you're learning from Japanese ball in hopes of perhaps going back to the States. How's that whole process going?
Yeah, that's a whole nother process. Still open to the idea of, you know, every kid dreams of playing, every kid in America that plays baseball dreams of being in the big leagues. And, you know, not to knock on Japanese baseball, there's definitely a lot of talent here.
Sure, yes.
And there's a lot of ways that you can get better as a player here. Ultimately, you know, being in the big leagues is the dream.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned a lot. That also, I've learned a lot about the analytics. My first year, I wasn't too caught up in the analytics of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I thought after my first year, you know, if I put together a good season, teams would see that I can, you know, I can handle the workload and they will, you know, sign me back. You know, that was kind of my mentality the first year.
Right.
But when that didn't happen, I started asking more questions, what I needed to change. And I was getting the same answer. I need to get more swings and misses, or I'm not using my stuff properly. You know, my repertoire, I'm not using it properly.
Okay.
And you can see that my first year, I was having a tougher time getting through third time through the lineup and all that stuff. So I've just learned, you know, the analytics of baseball, why it's important, all the spin rate, tunneling, and pitch design. I got my pitch design certification during the quarantine.
Wow.
I'm able to teach myself new pitch and you know, what to look for in certain pitches that I throw, like metrically, what makes a good pitch metrically.
Yeah, not just the shape of your slider, let's say, but where it starts and where it ends.
Right, and how the ball's spinning coming out of my hand. I learned that through the, you know, while we were being quarantined, and so that's helped a lot in certain, you know, especially for me, you know, my curveball, that was a big improvement I made from even last year to this year, you know, learning pitch down on my curveball, how to make it better, how to make it come out of my hand like a fastball. My cutter, I learned a little bit how to make my cutter more like a cutter or more like a gyro slider to make it, you know, more suitable for righties or lefties. My changeup, I've learned my changeup to create more side spin so that I can have it fade away better and give myself a more more margin of error when I throw it. A lot of the times the changeup is a big feel pitch, but if you don't have the right grip, mm-hmm. then you have to be more perfect every time you throw it. And I've come up with a grip that's more comfortable for me and more consistent. And so I'm able to throw it, you know, with a lot more confidence because I have more margin of error that allows me to, you know, get away with it because I have the grip working for me.
Right. I hope the listeners appreciate the fact that you're giving us details about your pitches because
it's no problem. Yeah, yeah. Pitching and pitch designs, love talking about it. Game plans and how I use those pitches probably won't be giving away any secrets.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, what I was going to say is just the fact that you're talking about the pitches because I remember seeing you that first year and thinking, well, this guy has a huge repertoire already. He's like a Japanese pitcher. I thought about the fact that you were throwing all these pitches, and it just reminded me of the Japanese pitchers and how they will throw all their pitches, you know, even early in a game, because they're not worried about necessarily getting through the game. They're worried about getting through the inning. They're worried about the next inning. So last question on Wednesday, it appeared you were commanding all your pitches. So as a pitcher, what's a bigger issue, the developing yourself to be more consistent with command or becoming better at getting by when you have little to work with on a particular day?
Oh, well, I think those might be two questions for different periods of your career. So I think, you know, as you're coming up, right?
Yeah, I got young guy versus older guy.
right. You're coming up and you work so hard on command. And I think it's through experience and through the years of playing baseball is how you learn to compete when you don't have your best stuff. You know, when you're young and your curveball's not working that day, you know, you run into trouble. You may not get through that inning or that game. And it's not until that happens to you a few times where you're like, okay, this has been happening to me. Let me make an in-game adjustment or let me find something else or let me make the adjustment I need to make that pitch successful. So I think it takes some experience, a few times of you getting beat up, out in the field for you to learn, okay, I need to compete when I don't have my best stuff. But as you're a young pitcher, you're learning how to command what you have right now. So it's a tricky question, I'd say.
Okay, well, that's a great answer. That's a fantastic answer. That was one of Jim's last questions. We're done. Appreciate you. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, and always nice to talk to you guys. Hopefully we get to see you guys soon at the ballpark and let in more people. So
yes, I'm praying for that day to come soon.
Yeah.
All right, but take care.
All right, you too. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks a lot, Nick. It was great to hear from you, if not to speak to you.
Yeah, maybe he probably imagined that he was talking to you because of the questions, because they were all yours, except for the one that I obviously said, hey, this is mine.
Yeah, well, it was sort of like, wow, I don't know what, I kind of felt like it was kind of half interview and half infomercial. Because he's like telling us, it's like, do you know about this stuff? You got to try it. You got to see it. See it now. See it now. You know, the only thing that was missing was an 800 number. And I don't mean, you know, I'm just being funny because he was just trying to be informative. But there was so much stuff. I'm going like, whoa, that's a lot of stuff.
No, it's funny. You saw him as a pitch man. Ha ha. He is a pitcher.
Oh.
But I felt like I was talking to Bill Nye, the science guy. I mean, I'm like, what? What? Yeah. What are we talking about here? And
bad blood, baby.
But the scientific approach was just awesome. So I really hope the fans appreciate that the players put a lot of thought into these games, more so than just the physical stuff that we see. And the game portion that we see is obviously there's a lot of preparation going on.
There is. And I was quite you know, interested in the kind of, you know, I hear, you know, people talking about injury prevention and so on as well. And there's, you know, injury prevention, especially with pitchers, it's like everybody and his cousin Marge has a theory. and right. Cecil's going, hey, don't forget me. So, okay, Cecil, we remember you. And so it was interesting to hear that about, you know, the things and the app to monitor stress on the elbow and stress on the arm. I don't know if it was the elbow or not, but to monitor.
It's probably, particularly the elbow, but probably since it's a sleeve, I think he said sleeve. I think it's probably measuring stress, but also movement. That's why I said, you know, I have to study kinesiology because I think with all the stuff that we're talking about, I have to figure out how the arm is supposed to move and what's ideal for a pitcher of your size and your arm motion and all that other stuff. Yeah, it was just very scientific.
It was a lot. And then, of course, one side was the stress and the other side was the recovery, which was interesting because, you know, it's all tied in together. And then the other part that really fascinated me was, you know, his just being open to everything. I mean, this was what struck me when we first spoke. You know, he's one of the players, and I think I'd seen this before, but when we spoke in March 2018, he was one of the guys who I thought, wow, this is like, he's here, you know, he planned to come to Japan, and it wasn't because I'm gonna have job opportunities specifically, but much more to be people learn stuff here and I'm going to learn stuff here.
right. Yeah.
And I'd seen that. I'd seen people saying, you know, I can be successful in Japan. I can do this. I can do that. But more and more, and it's not new. Gabe Kapler is the first person who said, I came to Japan to learn stuff. Of course, what he told me he learned at the winter meetings about 8 years later was I learned that you have to commit yourself 100% to what you're doing and not have a backup plan of going back to the majors.
Oh, is that what it was?
Well, that was his plan, was to learn skills that would make him a better Major League Baseball player. He said, but I had my eye one step ahead of where, you know, he was looking two games down the road.
He should have been looking at the pitches that he was missing, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, something to that effect. He wasn't 100% committed to being successful in Japan, so.
I gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, but when Nick Martinez came, and he's a young guy, and I'm starting to see these guys coming and thinking, this is a key to my future as a professional baseball player. And, you know, when I came to Japan, and even when you came to Japan in the early 90s, it was still a little bit of Mr. Baseball. I'm going to Japan. What the, you know, you gotta be kidding.
Right.
So, but now the guys are going, I want to go to Japan to put it on my resume and make me a better ball player because I'm a ball player.
And they've been lining up to come here and,
yep.
And some of them get back in line to go home,
yeah,
but some of the guys have some success here. So yeah, Nick is definitely one of them. I was impressed by him talking about his approach and to hear how cerebral he is about the game. And I just remember playing basketball one time. And I apologize again with all the basketball analogies, but
I thought you played more than
basketball
once.
Stories. What's that?
I thought you played more than once.
All right, I'm just gonna let that skip by. So, I was playing one time, and I was talking about all this stuff. Yeah, I played with some guy. I played on a pretty international team. There was some Peruvian guys, some Filipino guys, some Japanese guys, myself, a Canadian guy. And one day, I came back into the huddle, and I was talking all this stuff. And the dude said, "Hey, man. You know, all this stuff, all this smart guy stuff you're talking, it sounds good, but why don't you just make a shot?"
Hashtag high heat.
And the moral of that story is you can be really smart, but you can't smart your way to wins, you know, in this game. You've got to, it's got to be a combination of all of it. Mm. There are some guys who are extra talented, but they still have to be cerebral in their approach to the game. They have to think their way through the game. And there are guys who are maybe not as physically talented, but who put extra work into that mental part of the game, and they're good. Everybody's different. And so to hear Nick talking about that mental approach and how he applies analytics to his craft, and for me, it just raised my appreciation level for what these guys do, because, you know, I can't hit the ball. I know I can't. I can't field the ball. I know I can't. Maybe if the ball is flying at a specific speed and I haven't been on the field in a long time, I can run and catch it if it's in the air. But that's about it. So you've got to put the combination of physical ability along with the scientific mental approach. And Nick certainly is doing that. And the other thing, as far as the direct comments that he made, I think it's very important that we look at the fighters organization and say, hey, bringing Nick back, even though he was injured, and even though the team knew he was injured, speaks a lot for the organization itself. Because we don't see that. And I think that's a huge thing. It shouldn't be overlooked. If you remember the Jetsons TV animated show from the 70s, they used to have the robot football games in which the players slash pieces would literally crumble and fall apart when they crashed into each other sometimes. And a crew would come out, sweep up the remains, and then the robot player would be replaced. And that's kind of the way MPB has treated its import players. You know, if you're hurt, you just... that's okay. You know, go and get healthy. We'll get a new one. And you don't get re-signed, or you don't get long-term contracts, or you don't get a lot of love from the organizations. Most times you just, you know, you get released. And so to see that the fighters as an organization had the confidence in him, and you could hear that in his response to the question and the way he spoke about the fighters, his true appreciation and sincere appreciation for them re-signing him and bringing him back, and even though he was injured. So I just wanted to point that out, because I thought that was something that might get overlooked.
I was, you know, it struck me as the fighters were... Now, I don't want to be 100%, you know, sound like I'm asserting this to be the absolute truth, but what I recall about his injury was it was described as a forearm injury. Mm-hmm. And trying to figure out how he missed an entire year with a forearm injury. And it could have been that, you know, it could have been just a case of, you know, his original injury. You know, his original symptoms were forearm stiffness, which is one of the symptoms of a ulnar collateral ligament strain.
Right, which is what I've heard.
So to hear the, you know, PC, he went as far as getting the piece, the platelet-rich plasma therapy.
There you go. Say that one time fast.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of revealing. But also, yeah, all the technical issues that he works on and, you know, in terms of his pitch training and pitch design. Now, this is something that really interests me, because I think a lot of people are doing more and more of it. And I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but it struck me that I think I may have been in response to Hideaki Wakui's last start when I saw the pitches just look like they had more life than I've ever seen of his. And it's like somebody sat him down and said, it's not all just speed and location. It's more.
Right.
And when I saw that, I saw a guy who's basically all his life seemed to be trying to get back to square one where he was when he was 18. And I saw in his last start, a guy who looks like he's actually learned something and learned to be, you know, in a different dimension than he had been before. And so I have to think this is getting some play in Japan. I do know that a couple of teams, the Lions and the Marines, have both sent their, I think the Bay Stars as well, and the Fighters perhaps as well, have sent their pitchers to Driveline in the off season. So moving along.
That's the place in Arizona.
It's in Tacoma, I think. It's up near Seattle somewhere.
Okay.
So they do a lot of pitch. They do pitch design, and I know somebody was reminding me the other. Oh, you know, we were talking about this the other day on our live viewing event on Thursday. We were some of the website subscribers were talking about how Trevor Bauer came and worked out in Osaka, and I believe he came and talked to the Oryx Buffaloes pitchers about this.
Mm-hmm.
So he's for all he is and isn't, he's an advocate of remaking your pitching through, you know, better information.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's transition and give some information about the Fighters as a team. So, and I really want to thank Nick and the team at the PR team at Nippon Ham for helping us out. So thank you very much to all those guys. All right. So, if I had been in charge of the interview, mm-hmm. I wanted to ask Nick about the pitching staff,
mm-hmm.
because normally, you know, before the games, you go there too, and you see all the guys working out in the outfield, all the pitchers together
mm-hmm.
in their pregame activities. You got groups, you got the starters hang out with the starters and so on, right? The relievers hang out together. So how does that work with Nippon Ham? Because they got starters, they have short starters, they got openers, they got middle relievers, they got closers, they got backup closers. And then there's Chihiro Kaneko. What does he do? Just like, where do they go? What do they do? How do they prep? I don't know what's going on there. They got so much going on. The team changes the roster, the lineups, the roles, the expectations. They really have, I mean, Hideki Kuriyama, the manager who had quit right in the offseason
he told the media he was going to quit.
Yeah,
or I should say somebody told the media he was going to quit.
Okay. And so he's there, and I've seen him just exasperated on the bench a few times this season where the camera cuts to him and he's like taking the deep breath and serenity now, you know, kind of thing going on there. And he seems sometimes stressed out, but it's really weird how he has been able to break molds and break traditions, but not get as much criticism publicly for his management style. Even though the Fighters, unfortunately, at the moment, and there's not much in terms of game difference, but they're in last place in the Pacific League at 13-18 with a couple of ties. And you know, like I said, there's just a lot of weird stuff going on up there. And I don't know if they just think that they need to do all these things to get an edge, or they need to do all these things just to compete. But it's a lot, man, with all the roles for the and right now I see, obviously we see Nick Martinez starting, we see Drew Verhagen starting, we see Naoyuki Wasawa and Yusei Kawano, the rookie lefty who started today. We see those guys starting, but after that, then it just seems to be a mishmash of dudes going out and doing stuff. You're a short starter, sometimes you're an opener. It's just
we haven't seen the opener much. In fact, they've used an opener.
Yeah, maybe twice. Yeah, I think
even that they've had a few short starters. They used Toru Murata the other day as a short starter, and that
was a disaster for him.
Yeah, it was just.
But they ended up winning the game. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's usually you give up six runs early, it's not considered a success. So.
Right. Four, right? But yeah.
Yeah, well, the Fighters gave up. Yeah, he gave up four runs in the first inning and two, and the Fighters gave up another in the second, two more in the second. So, yeah, so I mean, we've seen that Toru Murata's been in there. They used a lot of different guys. Yuki and Saito has been used sometimes in that role when they deem to use him. It is unpredictable. I won't say it's unpredictable. It's not unknowable, but again, I think I talked about this last time that, you know, I look for these when I have a lot of free time, I look for these patterns and often find them. But I really haven't. Last year I did discover the Fighters, you know, it was funny because it was fairly obvious. It was funny because it was obvious to me and everybody was talking about it like it was a mystery, which was he had, you know, he had starting pitchers, he had short starters who would you know, face up to 9 batters, and he had short starters who would allow it to face up to 18. And then he had regular starters.
It's just, what is going on? I mean, yeah. I don't.
Well, I was saying, you know, he had one group who were like on the shortest leash. He had another group who were on the guys, maybe, okay, these guys can face, I'll let him face guys twice. And then he had Uesawa, and he had Kohei Arihara, who he trusted to go deeper into the game.
Oh, that's right. I left out. Yeah, he left out Arihara, their main guy, who hasn't won a game yet.
No, he has won a game.
He has one win. That's right.
He has one win, but he's pitched pretty badly. So
I wouldn't even say that. I think he has been as inconsistent as he usually is. In my mind, he just hasn't gotten a lot of run support, and therefore it looks bad. But yeah, he hasn't really been consistent and dominant. I think last year in the first half of the season he was. And then after that, yes, it kind of fell off. Yeah. So, yes. Yeah, I think he won the game on July 17th, 7-4 over the Marines. But, yeah, it just hasn't been, like I said last week, I don't think it's the guy they envisioned when they drafted him. And he came with a lot of fanfare and all that other stuff. But, yeah, so I'm sorry I left him off that list, because he is another guy who gets starts regularly.
Well, he's the principal guy. Of course, Ryusei Kawano has been in that group too. The Fighters have used more regular traditional starters this year than they did last year. Although at the beginning of last season too, they were using a lot of weird combinations. You know, I mean, he was trying out people as traditional starters, see how long they could go. And then when he found out guys weren't doing it, he went back and switched. So, but yeah, Ryusei Kawano is interesting. Today was his worst game, and I've watched him. He's pitched badly, and he's had bad results at the start because he didn't seem, well, and this is just my opinion and not fact, but he didn't seem comfortable throwing his pitches in the zone against good hitters.
Okay.
So even when, you know, it's like when the catcher would you know, hold the glove on the edge, he wasn't even going near the edge. He didn't want any part of the strike zone. And so he was, you know, he was constantly falling behind, and then, you know, he was coming in, he was grooving good pitches. When he ran out of bad hitters, he was grooving good pitches, bad pitches to good hitters. Mm-hmm. And it was really ugly. That was ugly, but the pitches themselves were quite good. And then every game it was like he learned more and more, oh, I can do this, I can do this, I can get away. You know, even if my slider is in the zone, it's a good slider. Even my changeup is in the zone, it's a good changeup. And that started to work. You know, he started making people try to hit his pitches. And that worked out really well. And he finally pitched well a couple of times, and then he won a game last weekend. And today he just couldn't locate at all. I mean, I've been charting most of his games, and his command was just horrible.
Come on. Yeah.
And so it was a case of really today was bad because he was bad. So yeah. I expect he'll be better. He still has, you know.
Yeah, well, he's a rookie. There's going to be inconsistencies in pitching at this level and pitching against a quality opponent like the SoftBank Hawks, 2-time Japan, defending Japan Series champs. That'll change.
Well, he did recover a little bit towards the end, but, you know, after he'd been shellacked early, he didn't give away the whole farm, but it was still pretty ugly. He probably would have lost anybody today. Didn't need to be the Hawks.
Right. And then with the lineup, of course, you've got Sho Nakata, who on Saturday broke a long slump with a 3-run homer in a big moment. It was in the seventh inning, and he hit this home run to help them rally and beat the Hawks 9-7. But you've got a couple guys taking turns at shortstop. You've got Juan Pojong, who was sent to the farm. I don't know if he was injured necessarily, but I think
his bat seems to have been injured. He's never really made any adjustments.
He hasn't exploded. Yeah, I think they're trying to really figure out what he is and what he can, how he can adjust to the Japanese style. I don't think it's so much a talent issue with him. But I don't know. I haven't seen enough of him this season. And then that's the same with Christian Villanueva, who played today and made a couple of really good defensive plays.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see his good one, you know, and I saw, I'm looking through the PLTV for stuff for my blog, you know, for videos, and I'm going, oh, good play, one barehanded play. I'm saying, wait, I saw him grab a ball barehanded and miss it. So that, so I guess I saw that one. I didn't see the one where he actually made the play. The one,
yeah, he made a really nice.
Yeah, I did. I saw it on Pro Hockey News as we were talking, but yeah.
So, he's making. I mean, with him, you've got to take the minuses with the pluses, and that's with any player. So he's going to make mistakes, so you got to eat those. And he, I know he had at least a one RBI hit today. I don't know how well he did. They didn't score very much, obviously. So maybe he knocked in the only run today for them, but. Certainly, the words of our buddy Claudio Rodriguez over in Toronto, and congratulations again, Claudio, on show
your 10 year anniversary.
Yeah, not that I can remember it, but yeah, congratulations. And he said in our Pacific League prediction special, he said, "Hey, look, you know, the one thing he's noticed is if you don't get it the first year, and you're a foreign player, you don't often get it." The second or third year either. And yeah, I can say that sure there's a precedent out there, but everybody's different. So maybe it'll click on for him, or maybe something will click in, or maybe he'll start to produce the way people envision. We don't know what the expectations are all the time for these teams.
Well, the expectations, somebody was telling me at our, somebody who knows about these things,
someone who knows about these things.
Yeah, was joining our live viewing event on Thursday. We watched the Dragons and the
had to be the Giants. The Giants
were the Giants. It was the Giants, right? So we watched the Giants and the Dragons play. All of we had people mostly in North America watching, but it was fun. And the guy said, you know, the Fighters had been at a game where Wong destroyed Japan. It was he played in an international game and he just demolished Japan, and the Fighter scouts were there and he said, oh, I think they just fell in love with him. Not
right,
but he said you just the talent level in Taiwan is so unpredictable and blah blah blah. And I don't want to misquote him because I don't really understand. You know, 4 days later, I don't remember exactly what all the points were. But, yeah, sometimes.
4 minutes later, you mean.
Hashtag high heat.
What were you saying? No, the point is that you see that sometimes when teams will trade for players who have done a lot of damage to them.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it over and over again growing up as a San Francisco Giants fan. A guy will just eat him up for a few weeks, you know, in a couple of series, and then 3 months later, the Giants are trading for him, and they find out, well, that was the only time he ever hit anybody.
Right. So, yeah, who knows what Christian is? Who knows what Wang Bojang is? But they probably have a level of disappointment in those guys, but I think they're obviously, I mean, look, they're at the bottom of the standings in the Pacific League, but they have more wins than the Dragons or the Hiroshima Carp in the Central League. So they got that going for them. And they only have to get to second place to get into a playoff spot. And they're only, you know, right now they're 4.5 games out of first, I believe. So there's not that much separation in the Pacific League, but you, like I said, it's a fun product to watch because you never know what you're going to see from day to day. And so that alone is entertaining. And I mean, you know, in terms of lineups, in terms of roster moves, in terms of what the manager is going to do with the pitcher on the mound, and maybe some of the in-game strategy, although they're not that creative, but they do have extreme shifts once in a while. So you're going to see something fun. So, and you know, it's the fighters. They're really popular.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, you do know, I mean, the top of the order is very much a set kind of thing. It's Haruki Nishikawa and it's Tai Shiota and it's Kensuke Kondo and it's Shonakata. And Shonakata has been quite good this year and Kensuke Kondo has been very routine. Tai Shiota has been up and down. Haruki Nishikawa has been up and down. But those four guys, it's like, you know, that's the fighter's brand. And then it's a bunch of guys afterwards. And they're sort of an interchangeable, it was Ryo Watanabe, and now it's not, and then it's Kenshi Suga, and, you know, just more of what you were saying a moment ago, that it's the other five guys in the roster that are sort of like a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought Kazunari Ishii was getting a lot of play at shortstop. In fact, I
was
confused to why they were shifting guys in and out in that position, because neither one of them is that much better than the other. So... what's the point? You know, in terms of starting, but maybe they're just trying to share or split the innings. Who knows?
I don't know. I think it is. I've seen a lot of this, and I think, and I have to wonder, consider whether this has to do with COVID-19, and I want to make sure guys are getting their rest. I don't know.
I don't know either. But like I said, it's a fun product. Let's talk about some other teams in the Pacific League. So the Buffaloes came in to play on Sunday today and had a chance for. I got this from ESPN, from a personality there, but they call it the gentleman's sweep, meaning you don't take all the games. You let one go by. And in this case, it was going to be a tie, and they were in line to win the game today. They had a 3-run lead in the first inning, but eventually the Eagles came back and got the win. So the Buffaloes came away from the series with 4 wins and a loss and a tie in the 6 games. And
which we would not really have predicted going in.
Not at all. But, you know, the Buffaloes have been getting it together. I don't know. And here's another thing that's very hard to predict. But I did say about the Buffaloes or about the Pacific League, I wouldn't be surprised if it stays packed like this the entire season. And you can have some ups. And if you can put together a 4-game winning streak or just a good week in these series, you could make some headway. And they obviously made some headway climbing out of last place. And it's not, I mean, the Eagles have been scoring more runs than any team in Japan. So it's a big deal when you go to their place and win 4 games out of 6 and the tie on in the third game, which would have been Thursday. So they played really well.
Well, I'll tell you, the Eagles, except the Buffaloes, with opponents other than the Buffaloes, the Eagles are 13-5 at home.
Wow. Yeah. So that means it's really hard to win there, unless you're the Buffaloes.
Well, the 13 wins, and 13 wins are the most of any team in Japan at home. So
take that. So, yeah. And I didn't watch all that much of the Lions Marine series out in Tokorozawa. They split that series 3-3. But the game today, you had Takumi Kuriyama hitting his 350th career double and then doubling in the go ahead run, which eventually ended up being the game winner. So that was cool for him. And what a player.
He started in left field today. I was shocked.
Well, you know, you got to get him out there, get those old legs, stretch him out once in a while.
I suppose.
19 seasons. You know, he's been in the playing, but this is his 19th season. So what a pro. I've talked about him a lot. I mean, he's a guy, I think, like I said, you don't believe so much in the lineup thing, but I do in the fact that if he's not surrounded by all those young players, that he's a guy they're going to try to pitch to because they don't want to mess with the other guys so much. So, and then if you mess with fire, he's going to burn you a lot of times. And man, oh man, that swing, it just hasn't changed. You know,
the only thing's really changed. He doesn't have the wheels. And I've seen that a couple of times on the bases where I'm going like, boy, he still thinks he's faster like he was as fast as he was 3 years ago.
But we look around and, you know, SoftBank struggled at the beginning. SoftBank is at the top of the standings. They're 18-14. And the Eagles 17-14. They just had this bad week because they had been in first place for a while. And, you know, what is it? We're 6 weeks into the season now, so I am starting to pay a little bit of attention to where teams are in the standings. But they're so close together that it's not, you know, like I said earlier, not that much separation. But it is interesting to look. Lions are in third place. And Lotte, it just seems like Lotte has just played a lot better than the Lions, but they're, you know, they don't have a better record for some reason. And Buffalo's, again, climbing out of last place barely with 13 wins, but it's fun. I'm enjoying the season. I'm just hoping that we have no positive tests. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to ask Nick about the testing, because it seemed like, you know, twice a month was not very much in terms of testing. So I don't know when we're going to have the next round of tests. I'll hope that the next week's interview, maybe we can ask somebody when they've had a test last, and because it concerns me. I'm very worried because I'm sure we're going to have a positive test along the way sometime, and I just wonder what they're going to do. And
you know, we had a case today with the J League.
Soccer.
Yeah, we had yesterday. We had news that one of the Grampus Nagoya players had tested positive, and then they found other people had been tested. And so every time somebody tests positive, they have to do a contact trace to test those around him. And so they had to essentially prevent people who had been in close contact with these other people who tested positive, and they didn't have enough players to fill the roster. So they had to cancel the game. So this could be in your future, MLB and NPB.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. All right, let's transition, making a seamless transition, and talk about the Central League. Now, look, we just had Adam Jones on the show a week ago, and he said he couldn't change the way NPB teams play the game. And a man who can is Alex Ramirez, the skipper of the DNA-based Stars. And he has tried. And, you know, it's a results-based world, so I understand it's all about winning and losing, but when do the results not matter so much? It's when there's a foreign manager involved.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people, I got a lot of flack, and I told John that my website's Twitter account became kind of like a Baystars chat room on Tuesday. And nobody knows when you're being muted, but I had to use the mute button a little bit because it was getting, you know, my phone was lighting up every time somebody had a complaint about Alex Ramirez's managing. And this, you know, first of all, and my points, you can read about it on jbullallen.com, but my main point is that managers, and I agree that fans absolutely have a right to complain. It doesn't matter, you know, if you think, you know, you should never bat this guy first, or you should always bat this guy fourth, or you should never use a left-handed pitcher on a, you know, on a Tuesday or whatever. I mean, that's your right to complain about things. I don't have a problem with that. But my problem was that the things, this started when Alex Ramirez uttered something last Sunday about Kentaro Taira, his starting pitcher. And he said, I got a fast runner on first, Tomo Tasaka. This was in Nagoya. And he said, I wanted to give the pitcher Kentaro Taira the hit and run sign. But being a starting pitcher, I wasn't certain he might, you know, he might never have ever seen it, and he might not have remembered it.
Right.
Because we don't do it. Okay, well, this opened up a whole can of worms because
we don't do it. Well, yeah, if I might.
Yeah, it's a starting pitcher, right.
He doesn't do it.
Right. Yeah, so it sort of makes, you know, it made sense to me, but the outrage that it provoked. How dare a manager say, you know, how can he have a team where he doesn't think the players know the signs? They're professional players, for Christ's sakes. And this went on. There was a whole shopping list of things that Alex Ramirez does wrong. I think they even included that he puts his socks on in the wrong order. because it was like that. It was like saying, you know, he's an incompetent. And then to cut to it short on Tuesday, and maybe it was Monday, a former BayStars legend, a Dice Game Yura, who was his pitching coach last year and this year is the farm team manager, won his farm game through his team executing three or four sacrifice bunts and coming from behind. And it's the kind of story Japanese sports editors really love. And so it occurred to me that probably the reason for this is not just that Alex Ramirez is a foreigner, because this kind of sort of widespread, I don't know, orchestrated. I want to say orchestrated because it was, there was a series of articles published about, you know, guys, reporters were going to former players and saying, what do you think about Alex Ramirez's bad managing? And they were writing stories about, there were a number of journalists writing stories about Alex Ramirez's bad managing, you know, quoting analysts and other reporters and you name it. And I've seen this a few times. And if you want, you can read the story on my blog. But the whole point is usually when this happens, there's an agenda. And the agenda in this case, I think, is that somebody within the BayStars organization has decided that the team would be better off with a popular Japanese manager.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that comment, and you know, you said the knives are out on your post for Alex, and I don't know. I haven't been here long enough in terms of covering on this level. It's only been 15 years and I've seen, you know, I just remember when Akinobu Oya was the manager and, you know, everybody just kept waiting for him to get fired because the team wasn't performing, but it just took a long time. And it just seems like if Alex, you know, the team is 15-16 with a tie right now, if they fall a couple, three games under 500, with him doing the things that he's doing, then yeah, we'll definitely see that in the public more. But what bothered me the most, I guess, was, you know, people's comments of, you know, things like people saying, well, he has made some boneheaded decisions, and why would you put a guy who doesn't hit for power in the cleanup spot? And, you know, the idea behind the number four hitter was that if somebody got on in the first inning, you'd be able to get them in, because the assumption would be that they wouldn't be on first base, that they'd be in scoring position and that a hit would drive them in, especially with two outs. But it has come to be the spot where a big slugger usually hits. But we saw a team that had a bunch of sluggers in 2005 in the Yomiuri Giants, and they finished last because they didn't have guys who just tried to get a run home in a two-out situation. They didn't have guys who hit behind the runners to help them move up. They just had guys who swung for the fence. And it just, you know, I keep trying to explain that these managers know the players better than you do. You're not in the locker room. You don't see who had that foul ball go off their foot and has a big welt, but they keep taping it up and going out there. You don't see that stuff. And the manager knows all that stuff. And they know who hits fastballs on the inside part of the plate really well and what pitchers miss in what areas really well. And you think it's a bad matchup because it's lefty-righty, but the manager knows best. And I would say he knows best. It just, if you're going to base it on the results all the time, it's going to look like he doesn't know the best.
Absolutely true.
And just because the guy doesn't have success doesn't mean it was a bad decision.
Yeah, absolutely true. I'm not saying that he doesn't know best, but I'm saying that you, the manager, my point is essentially yours. The wording's different, is that nobody's better position to know the ins, you know, the information available. Nobody's going to have as much information about that situation as, you know, the player and the coach and the manager.
Correct.
And so, you know, they know what the consequences are of, you know, what this person's going through more or less. They have a bit, they may be clinging to obsolete beliefs.
Sure.
You know, we Jason Koskri and I had an exchange the other day about Kate DeSano, his cleanup hitter, who was basically a guy who'd done nothing at the first team. I mean, he produced well, but he's a young guy, 27.
I would say
so.
He produced okay. I wouldn't even say it was
But it was in a very small sample. But one of my issues with Alex Ramirez is I don't think he's ever seen a sample size that was too small for him to draw inferences from.
Sure.
But on the other hand, having said that, you know, this guy, you know, for somebody to say he hasn't produced is ridiculous because
he's hitting 355.
Yeah. So what they meant was he's hitting 217 with runners in scoring position.
Okay, or he hasn't hit enough home runs.
Yes. Okay. So these things.
Or them.
Right. So, and, you know, and the thing that I'll tell you, one of Alex's things is he was an RBI guy hitting, and, you know, situational hitting is really an important thing for him. And Jason and I said, I'll bet Alex Ramirez looked at Kate DeSano last year. I think he hit 327 with runners in scoring position. He probably said, that's my cleanup guy. And Jason said, oh, at the press conference when he announced that he was going to be the captain, Alex apparently said that was one of the reasons. I thought because of sample size, it's really, you know, it's really, in my opinion, it's kind of a silly thing to do, but.
Of course, but if you're just basing it on the sample size, but if you're
let me finish.
Basing it on the sample
size. Yes. Okay. No, if you're basing it on what a guy hits on runners in scoring position, you're talking about a sample size and something that is essentially the difference between what people bat with runners in scoring position, what they bat in the rest of the situations is it has very little predictability. I mean, even batting average is unpredictable to some degree, and runners with scoring results with runners in scoring position is highly unpredictable. There's no reason to think a guy who hit 400 would hit better than 250 this year, is what I'm saying. But Alex loves that stuff.
And now, my point would be maybe the guy hit 250 or whatever he hit, but Alex.
Well, that wasn't the point. That wasn't the point. Alex's point was that he hit 340 or something. So that was important. You know, that was important for him. And it's I can understand if he said, oh, I like his swing, which I think he does. I like his approach, which I think he does. But if he threw in, oh, and he hit 347 with runners in scoring position, to me, that's meaningless. I think it's meaningful for Alex Ramirez, but I don't think it's meaningful in real life.
Sure. And I can agree with that. I'm just thinking that Alex is deeper than that. And so I'm thinking that, yeah, he hit 346. That's what he told the media. But I think maybe what he's also including in that is he had some really good at-bats in those situations.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
he hit yeah. 346 in that.
Yeah. I think so. And I think I said this last week that he's one of these guys who comes up with, or I've said it before, he comes up with answers for the media.
Right.
Because he knows, sometimes he says things that are speaking, he uses media vocabulary. You know, he uses things that reporters are, sometimes he says things that are dumb, and I think he's only using it so that they have a, they can understand what he's saying.
Exactly. They there's a hook on it that they can latch on to.
Exactly. Right. You know, that's why he said, I didn't start Daisuke Nakai against a Giants left-hander because he was 1-for-11 against Giants left-handers. I think he only said that because it's something they would understand, not because he really believed it.
Right. So anyway, I did see all these comments on your Twitter thread, and I saw stuff. And I just want to say to all these people, you know, it's not the 80s anymore. It's not the 70s anymore. Just let go of what you have as in your head as what lineup should be, and let baseball change. And don't try to fit in your ideas into someone else's.
That's my job.
That's your job. Except what he's doing. I mean, you know, it's probably going to take a while for people to get used to seeing a pitcher in the number 8 hole or whatever he wants to do. But he's in charge. You know, at the end of it, if the team doesn't win, it's not because he made the lineup out the wrong way 123 times. You know, it's because they weren't good enough.
Yeah, well, I guess the thing is that, you know, you were referencing Hideki Kuriyama, and he does things that, okay, he gets some flack. He gets flack for shifting, and he gets flack for short starters because people have difference of opinions. You know, people say, I don't believe in this. But when the language they use with Alex Ramirez is, he's not a good manager because he's doing this. They're not saying I disagree with it. They're saying he's wrong. And I mean, and you know, that was the whole thing and then the other one we got was the same argument that we heard in 1995 when Bobby Valentine was managing the Lotte Marines, which was an ordinary manager would have won 20 more games. Yeah. And somebody said in this fellow from Asahi.net, Mr. Ume Miya said, an analyst said Alex had cost them 8 games this year by his mistakes. And it just rang, you know, it set off alarm bells. And then I saw the Dice Game Era thing and I'm thinking, oh, this is such a setup. I mean, I've seen this. I saw this when Hideo Nomo went to the States. There was a huge orchestrated media barrage where every reporter was going to every player on the field and every coach. And it was like, tell me why you think Hideo Nomo will fail. That was the media plan. Right, Hideo Nomo's going to fail, and let's tell the media how he's going to do it because he's a villain.
Right. Well, we got to move on. But okay. Yeah, that was interesting stuff. And no, it was very compelling stuff. And, you know, keep at it.
The other side of that, of course, is as soon as the story started coming out, the base, two of the guys he was severely criticized for using, Jose Lopez and Keita Sano, pretty much eight pitching a lot, have just been killing pitchers for the last 5 days. like almost like they took it. And I wouldn't be surprised if the BayStars players took this really personally, because that sure seemed how it was.
I hope they did. All right. The Giants Swallow series was really a fun series to watch. Every game there was some kind of drama until today. And they're 3-game series. So the first one was a 5-5 tie. Second one was a walk-off win for the Swallows on Saturday, and then the Giants just kind of ran away early and won in a romp today. But a fun series, a lot of drama going on there. Thing I wanted to point out was Tatsunori Hara, something that you mentioned on the show a while back that he as a manager has brought up and helped develop on the first team a lot of young players, and that we're seeing that with the Giants this year. They're playing a lot of young guys, mixing up the young guys with the veterans in the lineup, and still in first place here as we, you know, they're 10 games over 500 already. And it just seems like they're playing with the other teams in terms of getting ready for the postseason, and they're getting guys some work as well as winning. So everything's working out for them in that respect. The Dragons, on the other hand, this is a team that basically has lost the heart of its order. Although Shuhei Takahashi came back to the first team, I think, yesterday, and had a pinch hit appearance yesterday. I don't think he pinch hit today, but I didn't see the entire game.
He did. He did.
Okay.
He did. The announcers were all set up for another. You know, he was one of the heroes yesterday. When he pinch hit and grounded out to second base.
He grounded out, he was a hero, huh?
he hit the ball behind the runner.
Oh, I see.
It was that little, you know, it was that whole little ball. They played high school baseball.
One out, he grounded out and put a runner on third with two outs. Thanks. But, yeah, it's, you know, it's all for the team. And then Zoilo Almonte, he had moved to the and I don't know if it was an injury or not. What I heard, it was ostensibly an inner injury, but I never really heard what it was. But he went down when Ariel Martinez, the catcher, came up. And then Diane Viciado had to miss a game. Was it just one? I think he just missed one game.
He was hit by a pitch, and he had some stiffness on his – he had a stiffness, I think, on his elbow or something. And he only missed one game in that game. Martinez batted fourth, and he hit a home run.
Yes, he did, and they won the game. But Viciado really hasn't looked sharp since his return. He hasn't driven the ball. He's poked a few singles, but he hasn't really driven the ball. So, but he's back. But, yeah, they lost their series to the Giants, but didn't get swept. And then they lost the series to the Tigers, but didn't get swept. But one guy they picked up in a trade last year, Takahiro Matsuba, left-hander, has done well for them in two games that he has pitched. And they didn't really trade that much for him and picked him up if he ends up being
They had too many guys. See, the Dragons last year had a roster issue. They had too many guys named Matsui.
Ah.
So they traded them all to Oryx.
They traded them both to Oryx.
They did. They traded them both to Oryx, and they got they said, look, we've got the E's, but we need the Ba. So they gave away two Matsui's, and they got one Matsuba.
Yeah, so they got Masato Matsui, the catcher, and Yusuke Matsui, the outfielder. They sent them both to Oryx. And I did see Yusuke, the outfielder, a little bit, but I haven't seen Masato, the catcher.
Well, he caught last year right after the trade. No, Matsuba hadn't done anything for a long time with
with Oryx. Dragons ran out of pitchers, and so they went to him, but he has been good. He's been good for them.
They've had two solid games, and some good stuff. And I still see Yu Daiono had another good game. Didn't really help a lot, but he had another good game.
Well, yeah, they yanked him, but we don't have too much time to get into the Dragons, but we'll hopefully talk about them soon. So a couple notes. One, Carp ace Daichi Osera taken off the roster with a quote-unquote injury, and he came out of Friday's game after just two innings, 33 pitches, and the reason given was poor conditioning, which can mean anything sometimes in Japanese, but I'm not buying that he's out of shape because he went back-to-back complete games to open the season. So first they said it was a mishap, and that's why they took him out. Then the conditioning story came out. So
I figured it out. Something like, you know, he had this, one ERA of one in his first two games, and but he's pitched worse and worse and worse as the season went on.
But yeah, that worse is still pretty good. You know, except for his last start, I think. But
yeah, well, that was the thing. And nobody, you know, they were not divulging. And I don't know why they weren't divulging. But I think it's probably something like his arm feels tired or something. You know, like he doesn't have any life in the arm because nobody was being specific. My guess is they don't really know.
Okay. All right. And then Tigers captain Kento Itohara has a broken hamate bone. He's done for the season. So that's some bad news for the Tigers. But I think they can get past that. I think they have some other infielders who can maybe, if not make up for the production, at least play the position competently and keep them in the running. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we got this one via Twitter from TheGambler23, and he says, hi, Heat question. After Jeffrey Marte went down with an injury, Yusuke Oyama has been red hot at the plate. If you're Akinobu Yano, the manager, assuming both are healthy, who's your everyday third baseman and why? Could you guys talk about it on the next show? Jim.
Well, I would try to answer the question. I would say I'll try to make sure one of them is not healthy. That makes it an easier answer because
You're going to get one of these guys?
I'm going to say this. Okay. I haven't seen Oyama play a lot. I've seen him hit a lot, but I haven't watched his defense very much. But I will say that I know Jeffrey Marte's got a – you know, he was a first baseman, and I thought I didn't have expectations for him as arm, but he's got a cannon. He's got a really good throwing arm. I watched him do infield, and I was really impressed by that.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't strike me as being a guy who's really quick and agile around the bag, But that's maybe just me, because people want to keep putting him at first base. So my guess is Oyama might be a better fielder, but I'm not sold. And I'm not sold that either one of them is a better hitter. Depend on who hits better with runners in scoring position. I don't know.
Okay. Well, look, I think you're a new listener, so I'll fill you in on how I feel about Oyama. To me, he doesn't have raw power. He's a guy you don't build a lineup around this guy, in my humble opinion. And the reason is he has that type of swing that requires a lot of energy. He's got to load up a lot. You usually see him standing on that one leg, and then he's got the kick, and his swing path isn't one of those power swing paths. So when he hits a home run, and you'll know it because he hits all of his home runs basically the same way, he clobbers a pitch he's sitting on and is a mistake, and he yanks it to left field. Now, sometimes he'll hit a ball to center like he did, I think, at home about 10 days ago. But most of his home runs are way deep into the stands in left field because that's where his power is in his swing. He can't drive the ball like Marte. Marte doesn't have to hit the ball with full power to get it out of the stadium, even if they're playing at Koshien. So it depends on what you're looking for. If you want that traditional slugging cleanup guy, quote unquote, as we were talking about earlier, Kate Tassano, keep hitting your singles and doubles, dude. Then you go for Marte. If you want a guy who's going to play really, really good defense, although Oyama had his share of throwing errors or whatever recently, he had a spate of errors, but I still think he's a really great third baseman, the best in maybe in NPB. I think I had him number one in our countdown that we had from Pete. Pete's question, the question that gives and gives and keeps giving. So if you want the defense and a guy he's probably going to be a consistent hitter, he's just not going to hit the ball out of the park, you go with Oyama. If you want a guy who can get a mistake and doesn't have to hit it full, doesn't have to square it up fully to get it out, you go with Marte. I think the answer is Marte. If he's healthy, he's a big bopper, man. So it just depends on what you want. But I'll go with the guy who's hot.
The other thing is, if you've got an imported player because of the restrictions, and you've got a guy who's duplicating his skill, let's just say value, because we're going to sort of lump them together as fairly similar. I would go with the domestic player because he's not using a roster spot, provided you have any other guys you want to use. So, I mean, if it's a case where, let's see, right now the Hanshin Tigers have four active foreign players, imported players, Jerry Sands, Justin Bohr, Onelki Garcia, and they just brought back Joe Gunkel to pitch in relief.
Yep.
I'm good. And Jerry Sands, who was the odd man out at the start of the season, has now shifted that to Jeffrey Marte. But things change. People get hurt. So that's why they call it a team. Well, I'm not sure that's not the only reason they call it a team, but I had to say yeah, something sounded intelligent for a change.
You're throwing out a Ramirez comment out there.
Okay. There you are. You are the man, John Gibson.
So I agree, but yeah, just go with who's hot. And with Sands, if as long as he's hitting, I think he's going to be in the lineup. But if he has any kind of slump, you will definitely see faster than any other team in NPB, probably either get dropped in the lineup, sent to the bench, or sent to the farm quicker than anybody else. All right, guys, it has been a long show. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it. We would love to hear your voices. If you can send us an MP3 to yakyujohn@gmail.com, that would be awesome. But you can hit us up on Twitter at @JBWPodcast or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at jballallen.com.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at @JBWPodcast and at @JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.